I can. Please introduce yourself, and we've got your slides up.
Yeah. Okay. So my name is Peter Wittenberg. I'm from the Max Planck Society, from the Institute for Psycholinguistics, which we deal with the human brain, what happens while we are talking, while we are listening, while we're processing language and speech in our brain. So that's our business here in the Institute. I have, as most of us have different hats, I'm also in the IT board of the Max Planck Society, so I have a pretty good overview about what happens in all the different 80 different disciplines in the Max Planck Society. That may be sufficient. So thanks for inviting me to participate in this discussion. I'll selected a few statements that may motivate the global interaction, our interest in this global interaction and cross-disciplinary interaction based on our own research and based on the work in a cross-disciplinary data infrastructure which we are currently building in Europe. And this may also give you an idea, I hope, why the Max Planck, the president of the Max Planck Society, supports us to be the NGS, in Alan Bartecki's terminology, the NGS for the WF, or whatever we will call it. So can you use the next slide, please? Yeah, so to give you just some ideas about from our research domain. So when we want to understand what the roots of our languages are, and here you see some the Polynesian track, when we want to understand what these roots are, we need to access much data to extract the features about all these possible languages and also extract features from other domains like climate data and things like this in the selected region. Well, I can tell you, yet there's no possibility to directly access most of the resources. So it's a lot about inefficiency. It's a lot of inefficiency which is needed. Inefficient work is needed to access the extract the features which we need to build these dependency trees. The next one is, if we want to understand our language machine in our brain, well, we also need to understand the functional architecture of our brain when we process language. So we would like to access lots of data from other from all these institutes which use now, for example, these nice fMRI scanner to make these brain images. Well, guess there's currently no way to be informed about what kind of data exactly is available at the different institutes and how to access this and how to combine this. Next slide, please. Yeah, so here's another example. This is now not about data, but more about automating processing or detectors, if you want. So when we try to automatically annotate, for example, video streams or whatsoever, we should have access to a wide range of detectors. Of course, we know that many labs are around there worldwide that work on such detectors. But yet, you can estimate what I'm going to say now. There is no systematic way to be informed about these different detectors and the way you could apply them in to data which is out there. So there's a lot of inefficiency. Now, well, you could ask, didn't we do anything yet? So please, the next slide. Yes, didn't we do anything yet? Well, yes, we are part of those communities which got the European money to build up what we call a research infrastructure. And I think we did a quite good job, similar to what Phil said about the protein database. So we have a flexible metadata system based on state-of-the-art standards. We have professional tools to support such a framework. Really great stuff. Next slide. We have something which we called the Virtual Language Observatory, where we harvest a lot of metadata from all over the place, which we can get. There are a couple of problems in there, which I come to, but we do a lot in harvesting, semantic mapping. That all looks nice. Next slide. We have even have a distributed framework to be able to chain processes, chain services, so to tackle complex questions like annotating in a complex way textual data. So we have done a lot with tools, and we have some data where we can work with, but, and this is the next slide, if we look to the reality of the data in our field across the globe, then we are faced with lots of buts. And let me briefly mention them. So we know that there is much data out there which is not registered. I should not say still known and not known or so, but which is not registered in some formal way. Thus, we don't have any access to it. We don't know what the state is of these of this data. From another point, if you look to the 200 linguistic departments in Europe that create data, and I'll not speak even about the individuals at the universities, then there are only a handful of centers from which you can expect at this moment that they deliver, that they have proper repository system, that they are able to deliver, for example, nice metadata in a persistent way, and so forth and so forth. Well, at this moment, there is no way to allow machines to currently access most of the resources blindly. Well, we speak about, as Alan said, about the future generation where we have so much data around, and so it's beyond the phase where we can look or handle data manually by individuals. So we need automatic ways of doing. And yet, at this moment, there's no good way for most of us to access these resources blindly, to combine them. So what you see all over the place is that people download data, download software, squeeze it in some form, and then, you know, to be able to do some operations on it. So it's very inefficient, and it will not scale for the future. Of course, there's no proper metadata which we can get at the appropriate granularity about these data which we know exist. And furthermore, there is no no systematic way of having international discussions about all these topics to improve this. And there is almost no, except some incidental ways of cross-discipline chats to get the data from other disciplines. So this is all in a bad state. Let me just, the next slide, please. So let me briefly mention a bit about a cross-disciplinary effort to come to a cross-disciplinary data infrastructure in Europe. So what you see here is that it's very briefly sketched here. What you see is that there are lots of hubs from the different disciplines, and currently we are talking with 20 different disciplines from many different scientific areas, and they all have basically a kind of hub structure which is indicated here. So they rely on certain hubs which provide data, which provide services. And what we see at this very moment is that most of these discipline-based networks start thinking about things which you could give to other centers which give common kind of services on data. So I mean things like long-term archiving. I mean things like building up a resolver and registration system for persistent identifiers, offering capacity computing, and things like this. So we have a network of big data and compute centers in Europe. You see this in the below in the lower diagram. And the question now is for this project, which is called UDAT, are there common services which we can hand over to these big data centers and which can give them in a stable, persistent way? What I see here at this moment from all the discussions which we had now is that first all the 20 communities, or most of the 20 communities which we have contact with, are in a process of redesigning their data landscape, their data organization. So it's a good moment to talk to them or to talk with each other to see, you know, how to harmonize and how to better structure the data landscape. Of course, that's what we need. We need to understand the data landscape of the different communities which are out there to be able to derive common services, to be able to derive what I call common building blocks to establish such a data landscape, data infrastructure. So And of course, I can say we already achieved after 1 year of very concrete work where we want to have services. So exactly the approach Alan mentioned, very concrete, come up with first services. So we are close to have first services. And this kind of discussion pushed us ahead to so that I also already can see cross-fertilization and awareness raising across discipline boundaries. Last slide. So there are a couple of questions when we did this very concrete work, such as, you know, do we know what common services are and do we accept them? Will they be accepted by the communities? Do we understand the data organizations of the different communities? Do we have agreed mechanisms to work on large and complex data sets in a secure way in a federation? Do we agree on the same essential building blocks for a common data infrastructure? You see, I could have more bullet points here out there. And of course, the answer is very clear. Yet, we don't have answers to most of these questions. But in this project UNET, we started a concrete discussion, pushed ahead by concrete services, discussing concrete services, so that we are optimistic that we have better answers in very soon. Now, why not do this on the global level? This would, we heard about already some communities which are well organized in this respect, where we can learn from. So why not extend this discussion to other communities and to a global level so that we can share, for example, the work of building blocks? And what makes me very optimistic for DWF is the point that across the Atlantic, I already see that there are 7 concrete working groups working on proposals to start working groups. So there are, I should better say there are 7 groups that prepare a note or proposal to start working groups in DWF. Working groups on very concrete issues that should be able to come up in 18 months or so with either best practice guidelines or with running code, as Alan explained. I think that was what I wanted to say, and I hope I could add also something to the debate. Thanks a lot.